We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 298. This is the episode about nothing, Scott. It's kind of like Seinfeld, the show about nothing. This is the Yankees podcast about nothing, since there is nothing happening in the world of baseball.
Pretty much of the month of February is pretty damn dry, usually. End of January, beginning to the middle of February. But we actually get to see baseball this month, so that's what's keeping me going.
We get to see the players, like the smell of the grass and
grown men throwing baseballs back and forth. Yeah.
And that's the real baseball doesn't start really till March.
No, I live for the throwing the back and forth. We get to see a lot more warm videos. Yep. We all get very excited and we, you know, we anticipate what's coming.
So you know what I really like?
There will be actual games though as well this month.
I like the low angle camera shots from the dugout that show like the blades of grass and the sun in the background. Those make me feel warm.
And then one person just running out past the camera.
Yeah. Yeah. And all the tweets from the baseball writers who are down in spring training reporting that, you know, Aaron Judge just came up to camp. He's driving a new Range Rover this year.
Yeah, no, it's all these reports and anticipation and, you know, covering every single little possible thing that happens down there. I love that part of it because we actually have, you know, kind of spurring off of your conversation with Sweeney last week. We will have real reporters down there reporting on real things. And that's exciting.
Yeah, but don't you feel like this year, especially since the two biggest free agents plus some other big guys that are still out there, that's kind of just hanging a cloud over everything? Because the conversation last year was, yeah, all the feels about spring training, but it was also, hey, like JD Martinez is still free agent. He didn't sign until after pitchers and catchers reported last year.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm really focused on what we have going on in this team, and I'm excited this year for the opportunity that this Yankees team is going to be a much better team. So I know that there's a lot of unknown with some of these free agents that are still hanging out there. I just don't know really how much that affects with the Yankees right now.
So yeah, the roster
that's why I'm
the
okay
Yankees,
where we are.
Roster for the Yankees seems pretty much set, and that's why there's still news to happen, but I'm not quite sure how it's going to affect the Yankees or if it's even going to affect the Yankees.
Yeah, and like Sweeney said last week, you know, there's no definitive say on what Machado or Harper do and where they land until they are wearing another uniform that is not the New York Yankees, because Brian Cashman does do that. He swoops in when he sees an opportunity, when he sees blood in the water. That's where Brian Cashman shines. So again, I don't think it's going to happen, but it would not surprise me.
How do you think they're feeling at this moment, sitting here February, Super Bowl Sunday morning, and those two guys are still unsigned? How do you think they're feeling?
I honestly think they already know that they're going to get their money no matter what. They're just waiting for the best opportunity. So,
well, they're going to get paid. They're going to be very rich. They're going to get a lucrative contract.
Yeah.
But they're certainly not going to get the like insane contracts that MLB Trade Rumors or ESPN or anybody else was projecting. 14 years, $400 million for Bryce Harper. 13 years, $390 million for Manny Machado. That shit ain't happening anymore.
At some point, they're gonna start to get that antsy feeling and want to get back to baseball and meet their teammates and all of that stuff and just get this process going. So, you know, this could be just a shakeout of you know, we're not going to offer the best contract until a certain time, and we know that anticipation will kick in, and that's where I could see Brian Cashman making his little Cobra strike. But these guys are definitely getting antsy for it. There's no doubt. Like I feel like you hear interviews all over the time. I was listening to CC on R2C2, and he was talking about this time of the year. They just like, yeah, it's a long season, but they get antsy. They get antsy to get back into baseball because they do it for such a long period of time. Then it becomes a void almost. And that camaraderie and being back with the guys and the fact that you get to go down to a warm weathered place every spring, like that's, so I think the anticipation of the players is building up, and you know, maybe that'll move this thing along, but at the end of the day, they're getting paid. I mean, Bryce could have taken that 10 year, $300 million deal back in September.
You think he goes back
and he
would have
been
Nationals?
Very happy.
and say, hey, is that still on the table? And if I were the Nationals, I'd be like, yeah, it's still on the table, but now it's $250 million.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, I mean, yeah, it wouldn't surprise, still wouldn't surprise me if you went to the Nationals. Like, I still think that that's the most obvious place.
If I were, if I were placing a bet on where he's going to sign, I actually would say the Nationals.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Look, I mean, the guy has been there for, you know, his entire career. He kind of grew up with the Nationals. He's the guy. I mean, if he stays there, there's a monument outside the park of Bryce Harper. That's the type of guy he is. He is an institutional player.
What if Machado goes back to the Orioles? I don't see that happening.
I don't see that happening. There's already a statue.
All right, so here's what's happening today. We are going to run through a bunch of mailbag questions. We also have a couple topics that we're going to hit on. And then on Tuesday, we're going to have another special episode. Scott, you spoke with one of the newest Yankees, Josh Stowers. He came over in the Sonny Gray trade. So why don't you tease that conversation a little bit?
Yeah, it was more the Shed Long trade technically, but it was the whole swap of players after Sonny Gray went from Cincinnati, obviously, for Shed Long. We all got really pumped up for Shed Long for about 30 minutes, and then he got flipped for Josh Stowers in from Seattle. So I had a really awesome conversation. Honestly, like it was a lot of fun, and we spoke for about 30 minutes. And covered everything you could possibly. We covered like just him, you get to know him as a person quite a bit. And we talked about him growing up in Chicago and kind of his, I had him, you know, put a scouting report on himself and kind of talk about certain things. So we get some really good, if you're into baseball mechanics too, and like training regimens and things like that, he talks a lot about that, a lot about his base stealing and how he goes about that. So I had a lot of fun. I nerded out with a little bit with some of the baseball stuff too, but we really took a good amount of time and talked about, you know, who he is as a person, if he's a dog or a cat guy. That was a big question.
That's, so, I think, the most important question.
Yeah.
And I'm very, I'm anticipating the answer very much. And I think we need to start asking that to everybody because it can tell a lot about a person, as we found out.
I agree. And, you know, now that there's, you know, if you're a cat person or a dog person, very, very clearly, I think we are dog people. And if you're a cat person, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's just one of those things. But, you know, I agree with you. I made it a point to ask this question because this is what we have to do going forward. This is very important information.
Yeah. Speaking of Sonny Gray, we can't get away from that guy. Did you see Derek Jeter's new daughter's name, Story Gray?
I did, and I did not even put the connection together.
Well, they're spelled differently. It's Grey versus Gray.
Okay.
But the initial Story, Sonny, like, yeah, I'm just wondering. I'm wondering what's going on there.
Yeah. I don't know. Congratulations to Derek. I'm not even making that association.
Did you even know that, like, I knew they had that first child because she was pregnant back when they retired Jeter's number.
Yeah.
But, like, I kind of just forgot, and then the headline came, Jeter and Hannah and Derek give have a second daughter. I'm like, a second daughter? When the hell did they have their first daughter?
Well, I think the first one, if I remember correctly, was right around the same time we had Kemp. So I think we were in line, at, like, pretty close around that same time frame. So I did know about that one. I remember
maybe
that
in,
one.
Maybe in about 22 years, they could get hitched.
That's what I'm saying. we're gonna when we go down to Tampa, we're definitely going to have to scope out the island and probably from the water to make sure to see where we can get in, get a little sneak shot, bump into them by accident with the kids.
Right. Yeah. Funny seeing you here, Derek.
Yeah, we got to find these opportunities. We got to create these opportunities.
Although he's in Miami now more than he is in Tampa.
Is he?
I think so.
Maybe. Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
Him and Neil Walker are both in Miami now.
That's right. That's right. Lots of Yankee ties down there in Miami. Congratulations to Neil Walker.
So we put up a couple more tickets for the spring training event on March 16th. Are they still available?
Yeah, no. So they're not available. Like they're fake tickets that went up online basically because they're already accounted for. They were just the tickets for people to go out there and get them. So we are totally sold out. We had 50 originally. We were able to get a few more tickets. We are at 67 people going to be down there for this this Saturday.
So that is friggin' awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
That for a spring training event,
yeah,
we can get 67 people to show up. Obviously, it's a great deal. It's a fun. Spring training is one of my favorite things just because the baseball is secondary. We say that all the time. It's more about enjoying the day, talking to people, like getting excited for the season. But, you know, 67 people, like, that's awesome. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. It really is. It's going to be a ton of fun. So that's the Saturday game. It's a 1 o'clock game versus the Blue Jays. And, you know, we'll be at the Friday game against the Red Sox as well. And I know a bunch of people will be too. So we're going to set up a little meetup afterward at some point, one of the breweries that we've gone to. Get our boy Tommy to find another stellar location for our pregame.
Tommy keeps inviting us over for dinner. What are his thoughts about 67 people coming over for an Italian dinner?
For an Italian dinner, yeah. He never really put a cap on it, did he?
No.
Yeah, Tommy, you're gonna have to let us know how many. What's the total? What's the cap?
What's max capacity at your Tommy home?
Yeah, you know, if spaghetti dinners can range pretty big.
Family style. You just keep dumping those boxes of pasta in there.
That's what I'm saying.
Endless. Yeah.
So this is going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a fun trip for sure. Then moving forward, obviously, we have the BP Crew events. They're all live on the website, available for sale. I'm just going to whip through them real quick. April 13th is versus the White Sox. May 31st is a Friday night game against the Red Sox, Boston Red Sox. We've already had a bunch of tickets sell for that one. And guys, remember, you can't even buy Yankees individual game tickets right now. So this is a good way to get locked in. These are all in section 205. These all will be a pregame. We're doing a shirt for each one. And then new this year, you get a hot dog and your first beer inside the stadium included in your ticket price. So it's pretty ridiculous, the value of what we're doing here. June 22nd, this is versus Houston. That's a night game. It's a Saturday, July 20 versus Colorado, and then August 31st versus the Oakland Athletics.
Good stuff. Can't wait for all those events as well. All right, so we're going to get to mailbags. Before we do that, I wanted to, I was thinking about like irrational fears for the upcoming season, things that keep me up at night, and I have a few. Maybe some are more irrational than others, but I want to run through them and get your thoughts. So Aaron Judge's health is definitely a concern. He had the shoulder issue in 2017, wrist issue in 2018. I know some of them are out of his control. Like he got drilled with a fastball in the wrist. Like that's out of his control. It just happened. But the fact is, each of the last 2 years, he's dealt with injuries. He didn't spend any time on the DL in 2017, but we know he wasn't the same player in the second half. And then last year, he went on the DL. The team started to decline because when Aaron Judge is in the lineup and on the field, they're a better team. So if he's out again in 2019 for any period of time, that's going to hurt the Yankees.
No doubt about it. And you're talking about irrational fears here. So I think the fears that I have, I don't really consider them irrational, I guess. I am fearful of certain things, whether they're irrational or not. But
well, right now he's healthy and he's supposed to.
The Judge one is irrational. I get that.
Okay, well, yeah, he came back and he was actually fantastic in the playoffs. So yes. He came back, he got his, he was doing dry swings, right? He was doing dry swings in
September. As opposed to wet swings, yes.
And then wet swings in October, and man, were they wet and juicy.
Yeah, no, so his health is for sure like one of those things you tend to have in the back of your mind because, you know, he's a big dude. Those guys can certainly, they're probably more injury prone, and you know, coming back from an injury when you're that big as well definitely takes more time. You know, so when you look at him, you really just hope for the best in the health wise. I mean, obviously the guy takes care of himself and does everything he possibly can to keep himself in good shape. But freaky things happen, fluky things happen. So yeah, but you're right. The fact that the Yankees season does, to some extent, you know, hang on the thread of Aaron Judge's you know, injury history and the fact that he could stay in the lineup is so crucial. We saw how much of an impact it had on the lineup when he was out. So yes, there's a talented team without Aaron Judge, but it's not the same team.
No, he is 2017. I mean, he was their best player, obviously, but 2018 really cemented that he is not only the leader of the team, but by far and away their best player all around.
Yep.
So he's so crucial for the team and where how good they're going to be from start to finish next year. All right, my second fear. What if Luis Severino can't regain his form and that, like, it wasn't just a tipping issue in the second half, that his slider just wasn't having as much depth, it wasn't getting the swings and misses, people were connecting with his fastball. Something else is going on with Luis Severino, and the first half Severino, we're never going to see that again.
Yeah, I still think we're going to see somewhere closer to the first half guy. I think that's really who he is. I think the rest of it, and again, I'm going to refer back to their podcast, but CC was talking about this and specifically talking about Severino. I thought it was interesting when you're hearing it from another player who's also another pitcher and has, you know, a close relationship with him. I mean, he was talking about the fact that this is probably really more of a maturity thing in the sense that he's got to, you know, continue to feel himself through the season and continue to feel himself throughout the entire season and, you know, realize that, well, hey, you're dominating for the first few starts and, you know, in your mind or possibly in your body, you're like, okay, well, I'm dominating. So I could kind of pull back a little bit and still dominate. And then all of a sudden you have a bad start and you're like, oh crap. And then it turns into two or three. And then all of a sudden there's a problem. I could see that happening. Like you get a little too confident and then, you know, you start getting...
Do you think that was what it was though? You think he got overconfident? I mean, he dominated for three straight months. The first 3 months of the season, he was one of the top three pitchers in baseball, right up there, Cy Young candidate.
I think none of us know. I think it's certainly a possibility. And when I'm hearing CC talk about it, you know, it's just making a little bit more sense to me too when I'm hearing it from another player that, you know, CC was also talking the fact that it took him 6 years to get to the point that like, okay, I can go out there and dominate every single time. Like, I don't need to I don't need to have a bad day. I don't need to have a slow start. I can literally go out there and dominate every time. And a lot of that goes to your mentality and how you approach each and every single outing. And you know, that was something that we talked about quite a bit with Severino. Like, if he has that killer instinct, that attitude where he's going to go out there and just absolutely dominate and his confidence is there. Like that's when we saw how good he was. You could tell he worked fast. There wasn't a lot of shaking.
That was my favorite thing about him was how quickly he worked. Like that bulldog mentality.
Exactly.
And I think back to that game in Houston. That was probably the nine inning, the complete game performance. I mean, that was just a clinic. He was getting the ball. He was already on the rubber. He was like, here you go. Try and hit it. Oh, yes. You can't. Next pitch, please.
And that's, you know, such a big difference. I mean, obviously when you're not locating as well and when you are getting hit around a little bit, you start second guessing things and you start, you know, start getting into your own head as well. So, you know, I'm sure it's a combination of a few things. Like you could a bad outing or a couple mechanical slip ups could certainly turn into a longer stretch of a depressed play, right? I mean, in baseball especially, if you're not repeating those mechanics, if you have a hitch in your mechanics, it can absolutely take a while for it to come back and you to right the ship. So, I'm not having it as a fear. I'm more of like I'm anticipating and I'm excited for him to put it all together for an entire stretch because I think it's there.
Can the Yankees win a World Series if Luis Severino is not their best starting pitcher?
Yes.
See, I don't know if they can.
I think they can because they
have other guys who can step up. Tanaka absolutely pitched like a number one in the playoffs. James Paxton has that potential as well. Right. But I still think Luis Severino, his makeup, his stuff, the way that plays, that hard fastball, strikeout, swing and miss stuff in the playoffs, that's, I think he needs to be their best pitcher, or at least close to their best pitcher in order to win a World Series.
I don't think, if I rephrase the question, I don't think the Yankees can win the World Series without Luis Severino. So in order for him to be there, he would have to be effective.
That's probably a better way to ask it.
I don't think he needs to be their absolute best pitcher at that moment. Like there are guys who could take that up. But if
he needs to
there,
be good. He needs to be good.
If he's not there contributing at a high level, then no, I don't think it's a high probability because he is a huge important piece of this puzzle. So especially if you have a guy like Severino who's going well and you can get, you know, two starts out of him in a short series, like that's huge if you can have that guy. So yeah, I think he's definitely an important cog, no doubt about it. Like you'd be a moron to say that he wasn't, but there is enough talent on this team right now to kind of pick up if he's not the best. But I do think that's Aaron. That's why I'm like, I'm not so fearful about that yet, knocking on wood, because I saw the makeup of the guy when he was good and we know what his stuff is and we know that he throws, you know, high 90s and has just, you know, insane movement on his pitches when he's right. So there's a lot of things right there that are just like, okay, when's he going to turn it on? And it's just going to stay on.
My next fear is that Gary Sanchez still can't block balls in the dirt. And then the Austin Romine truthers come out in full force. And, you know, he maybe, Romine has another good 10-game stretch where he hits 325 and everyone thinks that Austin Romine is better than Gary Sanchez. Yeah, I call him Romine Truthers, or maybe Austin Romanites.
This is what probably my biggest fear, honestly, is Gary Sanchez.
The third year in a row we're talking about his friggin' blocking ability.
Not even so much about the blocking ability, just him in general, because you know, I think we both agreed that, or we thought that, you know, all of this was carried over from hitting to catching to hitting to catching, and he just wasn't right. So I just fear that he doesn't get back to that place where he's right again. Because he's got all the talent in the world. He's, you know, when he's playing well, he's the best catcher in baseball, probably, if not on the top three. And, you know, the guy's got all world ability at the plate.
I mean, did you see the shredder? The shredder ranked him third in baseball after a season in which he hit 180.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, not that I take the shredder as the gospel, but...
And no, it's a lot of analytics and projections, and he's obviously projected to be a better hitter than he was last year. But still, the fact remains that Gary Sanchez can be one of the most impactful players in baseball.
Yeah, I only really reference it when it supports my theories, but...
Well, they put Aaron Judge... The shredder put Aaron Judge top in right field.
Brilliant. I mean, it's obviously a smart smart program. It's
the best system. Best analytics system.
Hands down, it can call out right fielders perfectly.
Yeah.
Gary Sanchez is... he is such an important part of this team because of the, you know, how he can impact the ball on the offensive side. And... And,
you just sounded like Aaron Boone.
I know, I did that on purpose.
God damn it.
and how he can control the strike zone on the defensive side. He can do a lot of really good things with the way that he makes this lineup totally different. And, you know, with new pitchers coming in as well, and they're, I think, still the question mark to this team is their starting pitching and how we can, you know, live up to the expectations. He's an important part of this. And I just really hope we can get Gary Sanchez back, because if we do, we have, you know, an all world guy. And, I just don't have a lot of confidence in it right now. And I wish I did.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be better.
I've been flip flopping back and forth.
Like, he's going to be better than last year, right?
He has to be. Yeah. He has to be.
Yeah. So, I mean, is he going to be the 30 home run, just complete force in the middle of the lineup like we saw in 2017? I think he can.
I mean, I think 30 home runs is a drop in the bucket if he's healthy.
Yeah. I mean, what did he have last year? And he was hurt and lost for half the season. So, yeah. What if the Big Maple can't handle the Big Apple?
Yeah, for whatever reason, this is going to sound terrible because people are going to jump all over me. I'm knocking on wood and knocking on my head and doing everything. I don't see it. The way that this guy is, as far as his makeup, the way he talks and just... I don't know. They're very different guys for sure. There's no, you can't dispute that.
Like, no, but you never know how the guy's going to handle the moment until he's in the moment.
You're right. And then I saw a freaking bald eagle coming at his head and the dude didn't flinch. Okay. Like, barely moved, feet planted, securely underneath him. No problems.
Aren't bald eagles just flying around Canada? Like there's squirrels flying around, just running around in America.
It's possible, but how many of them are diving at your head? That unless you got some kind of worm or you're holding something, not even a worm. They attack people and mammals. But I have a lot of confidence in the fact that he's going to have good makeup. Okay. Whether he's going to pitch to the level that we think he can, that's another story. But I think that if he doesn't and he comes out and has a bad outing, he's not going to hide behind it. He's going to admit it. And he's going to say, I was bad and I need to be better. Like, that's the kind of guy I see. And if he can do that, I have confidence that he will pitch well.
Yeah. And I think a bigger issue for Paxton is staying healthy and pitching a full season, which he's still yet to do, put together a 30 start season.
Yep. That's the biggest part. He's got to stay healthy.
All right. My last fear, and it's probably not that irrational. It's, what if both Greg Bird and Luke Voit suck?
Then we have the Matthew. The Matthew can play first base.
First. Yeah. All right. And then, but what about if
Tulo could go to first? Yeah, you're right. You're saying if he can't field.
What if he can't walk? I mean, the guy's bones are brittle at this point.
Then we cut him.
Right, but then that leaves a hole in the hole. I mean, Didi's not coming back in the first half, most likely. So the Matthew can play Glaber and Duhar, but that still leaves a hole somewhere.
Yeah, I mean the if that did happen and Tulo doesn't make it out of spring training, then probably the obvious thing right now at this point, the way that the roster looks, is Glaber would slide over. But I still don't think that's gonna happen. I still think that they're gonna try to they'll add another defensive guy. Like it wouldn't surprise me if like a Hechavarria type still was on this team for opening day roster.
How long do they flip flop between Bird and Voit if both are not hitting?
If they're both not hitting, like I think Voit's going to be the guy that falls off faster. They'll still, for whatever reason, they because of the left-handed bat, they'll stay longer with Bird. I think if they see a downfall in Voit, I could see them just ending the experiment at that point.
So Voit needs to continue his Shane Spencer act.
He does. He really does.
In the lineup. That's a next to impossible task.
I don't think he needs to continue that type of rampage, but yeah, he needs to be productive. I don't think his leash is certainly not as long. I mean, we've seen how long freaking Greg Bird's leash is.
Greg Bird has one of those leashes that just never ends. Just keeps winding out of the dog collar.
Right. And the fact that the fact that Voit,
I bet Greg Bird walks his cat on a leash.
That would mean it would have to be outside his jacket. He keeps it in his jacket. The cat might get cold. Do you think the cat definitely has sweaters, right?
Oh, definitely.
There's no doubt. Ugh, it's disgusting. The Luke Voit thing. If he stays productive, he'll be on this team. If he's not productive, there's no place for him on this team. That's it.
Yeah.
He's another right-handed bat in a very right-handed, lineup, and his defense isn't like defensive replacement type level defense. So if you're not hitting, then what are you doing? There's no point in him being on this team if he's not hitting. So that's why I think that they will stay with Bird longer, and they want Bird to be the guy. Still, I do believe that.
100%.
But Voit will be Voit's the leader in the clubhouse as it stands today.
All right, maybe you've considered Sleep Number bed but thought you couldn't afford one, but can you really afford another restless night's sleep? There's never been a better time to save on proven quality sleep. Now, during the Ultimate Sleep Number event, a Queen 360 Smart Bed starts at only $899, and we can speak to not only the beds but also the pillows. They sent us a couple of pillows, and I actually love the thing because So you know what I hate? Like you go to a hotel room and you just get that flat pillow that like 1,000 people have slept on. Well, the Sleep Number pillow, there's a different insert so you can adjust it. Just like the beds, you can adjust to your comfort. So I really do think it's a good pillow.
Yeah, the Sleep Number 360 beds are smart. They sense every move and they automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortable throughout the night. And that's the beautiful thing is that you can have one mattress firmness on one side of the bed and the other side can have a very different one so that both people are very happy with the firmness of the mattress underneath them. Come in during the Ultimate Sleep Number event and save 50% on a Sleep Number 360 limited edition smart bed. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. You only find Sleep Number at one of the 575 Sleep Number stores nationwide. Visit sleepnumber.com/Bronx to find one nearest you.
All right, we're going to move into mailbags. And we just ran through all of those fears for next season. If you guys think we missed any, tweet us. Maybe you guys have some irrational fears that we didn't cover. I'm sure there's many of them out there.
Well, I think a lot of people will have I don't know if they're irrational, but people fear Boone.
we have a mailbag question about Aaron Boone, actually, yep. So we'll probably talk about that. But I could imagine Yankees Twitter has a few more irrational fears.
Oh, I'm sure they're there.
And also, speaking of Yankees Twitter, if you guys have not seen it, Tyler has been doing a weekly roundup of all the good stuff and bad stuff from Yankees Twitter. It goes out every Friday morning, bunch of hot takes in there, a bunch of funny GIFs and videos and all that good stuff. So check that out. All right, mailbags. First up is Cody Hoxie. What three guys would you give $300+ million contract to in the game and why? I was thinking Judge, Trout, and Betts. And obviously, that's what Machado and Harper are looking for. Maybe it's not out there for them. I think if you're not going to be giving it to Harper and Machado, you're probably not going to be giving it to many guys. Maybe Machado and Harper aren't as good as Mookie Betts or Aaron Judge right now, but they're 26 years old and in the prime of their career.
So I think for me, the there needs to be a contingency on this question because it depends on the term of the contract. If we're talking about $300 million for 10 years, then, you know, it's a different story, I think, than even $300 million for 6 to 7 years. Like
you'll go up in AAV
if I'm a team, I'd rather go higher on the AAV exactly than, and lower on the years, possibly build in with some options, team options that are a little bit more friendly.
But that screws you in the luxury tax because the luxury tax is just years divided by money.
You're right.
So, I mean, if you're a team that doesn't want to go up to the max penalty for the luxury tax, then paying a guy $40 million for a season is really going to hurt you.
It is, but at the same time, you know, how does it feel when you have, you know, your 7 to 10 years of a very ineffective player?
Ask the Seattle Mariners about Robinson Cano or the Angels about Albert Pujols or the Yankees about Jacoby Ellsbury.
/A-Rod. There's a lot of bad examples of these contracts going, you know, towards the end of their terms, and you have a player that's not remotely close to productive or helping the team out. So yes, there are sacrifices in both ways. But for me, if I'm on the owner side, if I'm on the GM side, I would rather give more money for less years and try to, you know, get as much impact in those years as possible. So that being said, yeah, I think Betts and Trout are two of the number one guys that I would give that to.
I mean, Trout's almost in a class of his own. If Trout was a free agent right now, I think he would have already been signed, and I really do think he would have gotten $400 million.
I don't know about that, but I think he would have been signed already. I don't think they would have. He's just such a shoo-in, it seems like.
He's never had a bad year. I mean, Harper, you can make the argument he had the MVP season, and then the next season he didn't follow it up. He had a 1-WAR season. He went from a 10-WAR season to a 1-WAR season. Every friggin' year, Mike Trout's posting 9-10 WAR a season. He's the most consistent baseball player there is.
And as far as Judge, like the 10-year thing, I think he's going to, especially, well, the way it's lining up with him being in free agency as old as he will be.
Yeah, he's going to be 31.
31, yeah. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if they did get to an extension before that, although the Yankees don't really do that. It still wouldn't surprise me for a guy like Judge, who to me is one of those guys who is a you know, he's
spoiler he's a, alert for our next mailbag question.
Yeah, sorry, he's a decade. he's just one of those Yankees that they need to be part of this team forever, you know?
Yeah.
He's just one of those guys. But at the same time, 10 years for a guy that big is playing with fire.
Yeah, Betts is in his going into his he just had his second year of arbitration and he got $20 million. Next year will be his last year of arbitration and he's still fairly young, so I could see him. A lot is going to depend on what Machado and Harper sign for. I think that'll be a good estimate for what Betts signs for.
Yeah, I mean, but and Betts is he's obviously proving to be one of the best players in baseball, and he's getting more consistent. It seems like, unfortunately for us, I think that having a guy like JD Martinez hitting around him definitely helps a lot too. But he's definitely one of the guys that's going to be more deserving. The consistency to me is very important. You need to see that consistency. And so that's why we're looking at the two players that we're seeing now on the market. Like, to me, the Machado, it just makes more sense for a lot more teams because of the consistency that he's shown and the defensive prowess that he has on the infield. So he's the guy that I would give more money to. Harper scares me.
Yeah, I'm only giving that much money to guys who are still in their 20s. And literally the only names I could think of are Bregman and Jose Ramirez. And I don't think I would even give them that much money, but those are the only other two guys that I could even come up with for this conversation.
Right. There's not a lot. That's the end of the day. Like and you know, again, I'm referring back to the conversation you had with Sweeney last week, but there are some... It's an interesting conversation when you start looking back at what the contracts were when A-Rod signed his last deal and where they are today. And a lot of people say, well, baseball is growing. Why are the contracts not growing as well? Well, I think that was such an outlier and there was such an inflation at that point that it's almost hard to look at that contract and say that's a precedent that needs to be, you know, continued on, because it was such a bloated contract and there were so many of them being handed out that at some point these owners are going to look back and say, well, that was bad business. And yeah, we're making more money, but why would we go back to a contract that was bad business in the first place? Why would we not get smarter? And even though they were making more money then, or we saw the, what was it? $295 million. Was that his deal? Why are we going to pay
for A-Rod?
why are we going to pay
the second deal? You're talking about the Yankees contract. Yeah.
Yes. So why are we going to pay something like that when we realize that, you know, the back end of that is not good for business?
Well,
so
I mean,
I
also,
don't know. Just there's a market correction that's happening, I think.
I mean, that's clearly what's happening. I also think that when A-Rod was signing those contracts, basically from the 2000s to up until like 2012, 2013, when Cano got his 10-year deal, there was a precedent for players actually playing well through their 30s. That precedent is pretty much gone. I think that left with steroids, but it also just, it's not, a 38-year-old player is not as good as a 22-year-old player. It's just the facts of the matter. It's just reality. So, like you said, it's bad business to pay a guy $28 million when he's 38, when you could pay a guy $700,000 when he's 22.
There you go.
All right. The next question is from Austin Jones talking about Aaron Judge. So we saw last year that Aaron Judge was our best player. The Yankees looked so flat when Judge went out. Even when he came into the game late just to play defense, our crowd and team just got so much more energy. With all that said, when do you think we will see an extension and for how much? Also, can we just call him the captain of the Yankees already? So you kind of talked about it already, but that's why in my offseason GM plans, from when you remember from a couple months ago, I want to pay Judge sooner rather than later because I want him to be a Yankee for life, and I don't want to have to deal with, do they pay him when he's 39 or do they not pay him when he's 39? Because you know it's going to be an issue when he's a free agent. So 29. Why not do it now?
Yeah, yeah. Because it's just too far away, I think, for him. I don't think he would do it. That's the biggest thing. That's why I was kind of balking at that. And if you're looking at what the Yankees do, when did they negotiate with Jeter? It was the year before he became a free agent, right? That's when they signed it. I think it was the year before
so
he was actually on the market.
Referring again back to the Sweeney episode, last episode, he mentioned the Yankees took both Rivera and Jeter to their last year of arbitration before they extended them.
Right. And so we're looking at that and what the Yankees do. That to me will probably be pretty close to what we see with him. I mean, I think they will extend him early. They won't let it get to free agency because I think it's good on both sides for that to get done. Like Judge wants to be a Yankee for the rest of his career. Like, it makes a lot of sense for him to do that too. So I do see that happening.
They extended Cano.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be. I don't think it's going to play out as a big problem, honestly. I think the fact that we're not seeing a lot of these big contracts now, also because the Yankees know damn well that they have to pay some of these guys that are coming up soon. And maybe that is sooner than later to lock them up and to say, okay, you're going to be a Yankee for the rest of your career, and we're going to lock that up. So maybe they do it before, they did approach the contract situations with Rivera and Jeter. Maybe that's something they get ahead of. But I do think that that's very much into play and why they are doing what they're doing currently with their roster and their salary. I think it absolutely has a lot to do with it.
And also for the captain thing, Derek Jeter won 4 World Series and played in the league for, what was it, 7 years before he was named captain?
Yeah.
He was named captain in, when was he, 2002 or 2003? Somewhere
it's not taken lightly. It's not taken lightly. It's not something that they give out just because we think it's something that they should be giving out.
Right. And Aaron Judge can still be the leader of the Yankees without being the captain of the Yankees, and I think that's what he is.
Right. Well, you know, if you talk to them, their captain is Brett Gardner still. So that's the guy that they've all in the clubhouse anointed.
Okay,
as their guy.
What we heard with Paul O'Neill in the '90s. He was their emotional leader, and David Cone was an emotional leader. Like all of those, they had all those Posada emotional leader. Like yes, you have many players in the clubhouse who do different things, but if there's one guy, it's Aaron Judge.
No, I agree, but I think when you have to have a complete changing of the guard for that even to be consideration as well.
So you're saying like Gardner needs to
be off
no longer be on the roster
for sure.
Sabathia maybe. I mean, they never give it to a pitcher. It's always a player, a position player.
But I don't think it's not something that they're in a rush to do either. It's certainly not something. And the other thing is it may not happen unless you win a championship. You got to win. If you win,
you also have to sign him to a long-term contract. Give him the captaincy.
Yes.
Because you can't name him captain and have
lose
him walk
him
in free agency. Yeah.
That would be embarrassing. That would be a black mark.
We're looking at like 2022 if it's even going to happen.
Yeah, so it's gonna be a little while, but you know we gotta win some game, we gotta win some a championship or two here.
At least one championship before that even happens
is a prerequisite, no doubt.
All right,
next, at least today.
Next question is from William O'Neill. He on Twitter at William F. O'Neill. The Yankees address starting pitching. The bullpen is strong, and the infield is solid. With Gardy likely on his last season, Frazier a question mark, and Stanton a probable DH, why aren't the Yankees after Harper? Hashtag another Harper question. William, you're not the only one asking Harper questions.
Yeah, so I don't think they're going to go with the term. That's it. I don't know how much more I could say on this. I think the fact that he's been inconsistent, he's got injury history, like, why are they going to give him a 10-year deal? I don't get that. They're not going to, so... I think if they gave an
outfielder a 10-year deal, and that was when
they already did that. Yes.
Traded for Stanton.
Right. If the market comes back to them, possible. It's very possible. If the market comes back to them and Harper comes up and stands up and says, okay, I will do a 4 or 5 year deal. You're going to have to pay me a shit ton of money, but I'll do a 4 or 5 year deal. I think the Yankees are back in the conversation at that point.
And I've been taking,
we're talking 8 to 10 years, ain't happening.
I've been practicing my first base scoop, and I've been taking grounders, and I'm ready to go, Cash.
Yeah, so I think there's possible landing opportunities for him in New York, but you know, it's got to be more of a decision on him, and you know, he's got to conform to what fits the Yankees better than the Yankees going out there and stretching themselves for a guy that is not really a huge need.
So I mean, there's still people out there for the Harper and Machado free agency argument, making the argument that the Yankees should sign it. Rohan wrote an awesome article on Bronx Pinstripes the other day. It's called "Why the Yankees Should Strike in Free Agency," and really he cites two reasons. One being that the farm system is not as deep as it was the last couple of years. If you look at the MLB pipeline, top 100, and all the different prospect rankings, they've got two guys in the top 100. Florial, who's their top prospect, he's a few years away, I think we all agree, for the outfield. And then Loaisiga, who we think could make an impact for the team next year. But other than that, they traded away a lot of young players. Sheffield, Rutherford, Fowler, Mateo, Caprellian. These guys, and then even the other guys that sort of you could count on to make some sort of contribution, like the Tyler Austin-type player. Those guys aren't in the system anymore. So that's a big reason why he's saying the Yankees can, if they sign a free agent, it could make a bigger impact because they're not going to get that impact from the system next year.
Right. I mean, I understand the premise behind everything and talking about the win curve and that the Yankees are most likely at the top of their win curve as well. When you're looking at the system, like it definitely makes a ton of sense that they're not, you know, at the top any longer with the depth of their system, but they have so many of these guys now that are on the team and that were, you know, rookies last year or didn't even play. I mean, you're looking at Gleyber and Andujar, both rookies last year, both, you know, had impact years. You have a guy like Clint Frazier who, you know, hasn't had a full year, unfortunate for, you know, the concussion injury. And so he's still a guy that you can, you know, hopefully count on to come and make an impact that really hasn't made an impact yet. So you're still seeing guys, I think, that are not in these rankings and not in the minor leagues, but still are really at the beginning of their impact years. So I get how you could say, well, let's add the impact bat, add the impact free agent right now because you put them over the top. I get that.
Right. That's basically, you mentioned the win curve. That's basically what it's saying. That the more a team stands to gain with potentially winning a championship or more postseason success a team stands to gain, that means the more free agent could impact them versus a team that's further down their win curve. Maybe they're projected to finish 500, so adding a big free agent only gets them to 86 wins. That might not be as much value to that team.
The only thing with that too, though, is you're also adding a player, like talking about Machado specifically. Let's say, you know, he were to come and he was the third, he would be the third baseman, right? Let's, you know, Didi's back, he's the third baseman. Then you're basically subtracting one of your guys that got you to that point as well. So there is a subtraction with the addition. And, you know, at that point, yes, he's a better player. There's no doubt about it. But when you're talking about the win curve and you're adding a Machado to put you over the top, but you're also subtracting a guy like Andujar, because most likely if one of them is on the team, the other one is not.
Right, then, but you wouldn't just be tossing them away. You'd be probably trading them for an asset.
That's fair for sure. But there's also a consideration of like what got you to the top of that win curve, but now you're also getting rid of a guy. I don't know. There's other considerations for that, I think. And when you're talking about the fact that he's in the beginning of his career, that Glaber's in the beginning of his career, that potentially Clint Frazier is, you know, hasn't even really started his career, you're still seeing guys that are going to make more of an impact moving forward than what we saw even last year, because I do think Glaber, you know, will be better this year. I think he'll, I think we both agree that there was some health concerns in the second half. Andujar, we're hoping can find more consistency on the defensive side, but can build on his offensive side. And then Frazier's a real wild card. We don't know what we're going to get from him. I mean, he could be absolutely an impact player, or, you know, he could not, you know, perform to the level we expect or want, or, you know, unfortunately could, you know, these concussion symptoms could linger on as well. I mean, we don't know until we see how he does. So I still think there's a lot of upside with the way that this team is constructed.
Maybe left field should be a not so irrational fear for 2019.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. It's definitely going to be one of the bigger question marks.
But again, I encourage you to check out the article. Many people are making the point that the Yankees are in a position they should sign one of those two guys. A lot of people are saying they should sign both, but it's an analytical way to sort of drive home a lot of the points that a lot of people are making. So I found it interesting. Bodie at BB Burn 27 on Twitter. I butchered that. Who is going to be the shortstop on opening day? Because I might jump off the GW bridge if it's too low.
Here's what I don't get about this. This is, okay, I get everybody's like, oh, too low, not the same guy. Like, quit calling him too low. It's not too low. It's just Troy Tulowitzki. It's like this. Okay, if he is healthy and is the shortstop on opening day, or I'm sorry, if he's the shortstop on opening day, that means he's healthy. So why is that a bad thing if he's healthy? Like, if he could be a very good player if he's healthy. If he is actually healthy, which is the biggest thing that everybody's looking at, you have a healthy guy, why would you not want that? Everybody should want that. Everybody should want a healthy Troy Tulowitzki, because a healthy Troy Tulowitzki is very possibly a damn good player. Like, I get the fact that nobody expects him to be healthy, but if we're talking about opening day and he's there, that means he's healthy.
It's because we've been down this road before.
But
we've been down this road with these Yankees, with these over-the-hill Yankees who were good 6 years ago that are just a name at this point. And it's kind of frustrating to have to watch them send out another flyer on Troy Tulowitzki. And I get what you're saying. If he's playing, that means he's healthy, obviously, right? Because they spent league minimum on him. If he can't field his position and he can't produce offensively, they're going to cut him, and I get that. But there, what if there's a chance that he's just adequate, and it's like, well, he's okay enough, and he's a name, so he's going to get the nod because he's Troy Tulowitzki, and he's fine, he's average.
But that's what we're going to get for anybody playing at shortstop. That we're not going to go out and get it. There's not going to be an impact guy that's going to be the starting shortstop for
I think a lot of people right now would say that they want the starting infield to be Glaber at short, LeMahieu at second, at least.
That's still a very good possibility.
That's probably your best infield as it stands right now on paper.
I mean, that's a very good possibility, though. That's the thing. Like, that would be, if we're talking about a possible second scenario on the Yankees as we stand today with the roster that is today.
That's the first scenario.
I don't think so. I think the first scenario is they want Troy Tulowitzki to be there, and they want Glaber to stay at short or second.
So I think the Yankees want Glaber to stay at second. LeMahieu plays first, third, and second once a week, maybe?
Yeah, he floats. I think ultimately they want him to float.
Okay.
And so, yeah, because if Tulowitzki's healthy, and, you know, if he's not, even if he's not the same offensive player, if he's healthy and can play defense, he's a damn good defender.
And but you also realize that's what they would want him healthy. To keep him healthy, you're probably not going to be able to play him 6 days a week.
I don't know. All I know is that if he's there on opening day, he's healthy. And if he's there opening day and healthy, I got no problem with him being there. He could be a very good player if he's healthy. The reason he has been a disappointment for the past years is because of his health. So if we're staring at a guy who's on two legs, able to move around with no issues, the heels are not problems, we're seeing this guy, you know, go around, make all the defensive plays, adequate with the bat, that's what we would get anyway. with a defensive replacement.
So maybe Bodie, don't jump off the GW bridge. Just tweet some angry thoughts. Maybe just do that.
I mean, the thing about it, like, to me, it's a failsafe. It's like we're good either way, right? Because if he's not healthy, he's not on the team. If he is healthy, he's probably making an impact. So I don't see the downside in this. Maybe the downside is that people are like, oh, he's healthy on day one, and then day three he's hurt, and now what?
Yeah, I mean, okay. Yes, that you hit it on nail on the head. It's that they leave spring training counting on him, and then 2 weeks later he has heel issues again and he can't walk.
Okay, I see that. Then the Yankees, and I'm sure this will happen, they need to have a rock solid contingency plan. That has to be there. It has to be in place.
Wasting a roster spot on somebody who at any moment could just break again.
But again, I have also said that if we're getting a defensive replacement like a Hechavarria type, we have that guy in the system. If we're not talking about offense, and we don't care as much about the offense, but we need a guy to lock down shortstop, to be a defensive shortstop and lock down that position until DD's back. And whatever offense we get, we get. And because that's probably going to be the case if we went on the free agent market right now and picked up a defensive guy, right? Then we have that guy. And his name is Tyler Wade. Yeah.
No, so Tyler Wade last year was Ben Zobrist 2.0. Now he's Hechavarria 2.0.
Yeah, we don't know what he is yet.
2.0, 0.1, V6.
What we do know about him is that he can play defense at a high level. That is a known quantity.
He's fast.
We do know that. He can play defense and play defense well. So if we're not looking at him to be an offensive threat and be that Zobrist type where he can, you know, do a bunch of things with the bat, then we get what we get with him out of the offense, and we get a very good defender.
It's just unfortunate.
I just see that as that's a possible good contingency plan if we're looking for defense, if we're looking for run prevention. I'll speak in terms of today. Run prevention, Tyler Wade, shortstop, good contingency plan.
It's really unfortunate that in the majors, Wade has looked like he won a raffle to get an at-bat.
Well, he's had a couple of good stretches.
Him out of the stands. They picked him out of the bleachers. He's four beers deep. Hey, here, kid, here's a stick. Go swing it.
Look, again, we're not gonna look for offense out of that position. We can't, not right now. I don't think it's a reality. If we're all looking at an impact bat to be our starting shortstop on day one in waiting for Didi, you're either at one, you're banking on them signing Machado because that would probably be the only reason for that to happen, or your expectations are way out of whack. Because what's the reality for shortstop before DD gets back? The reality is a defensive guy who can lock it down. And honestly, the Yankees need that. They do need a defensive guy out there. With the troubles that Andujar has had at short, or at third base, I'm sorry, and Glaber had at second.
Well, and short.
No, but having them both in their positions that we think they will start, you need to have a defender that is going to be, you know, carrying the load at shortstop. You need a plus defender at shortstop with those in between those two guys. So if Tulowitzki can't move around, then he can't be your shortstop. If he can move
then
around,
just,
he's a good
if,
defensive
if
shortstop.
You're, if I think if you're iffy on Tulowitzki in spring training, you just say, this isn't working. We're moving on. We can't take the risk.
I'm fine with that. Fine with that.
All right. Larry Alexander says, lots of people were quick to blame Boone for last year, but I think he did okay with 100 wins. Question is, can anyone go all the way with the front office totally committed to metrics while ignoring the gut? Do the metrics honestly tell you today is hot and humid and CeCe had BOGO burritos last night, or Bird is afraid of losing his chance now that he's afraid to swing? That kind of stuff. The idea of CeCe having some burritos and then just sweating out there in the July heat. It's quite the visual.
I mean, that's when he's at his best, isn't it? I have a lot of confidence in CeCe after some BOGO burritos.
But he's off the BOGO burritos and all of the breakfast cereals now that he had a heart procedure.
Potentially, maybe just scaling it back. I mean, who knows? You gotta have the things you like still, but there's probably a scale back. And in season, I think he does eat more of kind of whatever he wants. But we know how he plays at a certain weight and how he hadn't played at another weight. I just got a lot of confidence in CeCe at this point, knowing himself and knowing himself well. That's what I have confidence in. As far as Boone,
the metrics are not going away.
As far as Boone, I have the metrics are not going away, but at the same time, I think we're going to see a guy that's feeling his way through the position one as a manager and knowing his players. And I think he got a lot more information on his players last year, and I think we're going to see him continue to grow. But yes, he will rely on metrics. But I do think that we're going to see more of the him reacting to the what he sees and how he knows his players. Like, that's going to be a work in progress.
All right, Chris Orsi says, do you guys feel that baseball has undervalued switch hitting? Jorge and Bernie were prime examples of how important they were in turning a lineup over. Even Tex had a huge impact because he could switch. We didn't have to platoon first base. Can Hicks have the same impact, and does it help his case for a new contract? Well, I'll say this about Hicks. I was looking through like the best switch hitters in baseball, and Aaron Hicks is most certainly on that list. He is one of the best switch hitters in baseball, along with Jose Ramirez, Francisco Lindor, Marwin Gonzalez, Ozzie Albies, maybe Jed Lowry. Like, those are the switch hitters in baseball. The Yankees in 2009 had better switch hitters than all of those guys. Teixeira, Posada, Swisher, all in the starting lineup. And then they had Melky coming off the bench.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how it's changed. I mean, we're seeing, like you said, we're seeing a lot less switch hitters in the game, period. And I think that does go to a lot more of these guys specializing in what they do, and they're not switch hitting from an early point at this point. So when we're looking at the amount of switchers, the impact that he can have, I mean, yeah, he's a big impact for sure, because one, he's really the only left-handed guy at this point until Didi is out Didi is back. But the fact that, you know, we have no idea what to expect at first base, he's a huge impact. And I think that he's extremely valuable. And I think the Yankees should extend
Hicks.
It's
crazy, isn't it? It's pretty scary that most likely what the starting lineup is going to be, what we think it's going to be, Aaron Hicks is the only left-handed hitter.
Yeah, as of right now, for sure. It's crazy. It's a very different game offensively.
What do you mean?
I mean, then what we're talking about, like, when we're looking back at the Teixeira, Posada, Swisher, Melky, the 2009 team, the 2009 baseball offensive landscape.
I mean, that was maybe the most balanced lineup the Yankees have ever had.
But the game itself had more switch hitters. We're looking at now, there's just not as many.
Why do you think that is?
I think it's a lot of a development. I think they're specializing earlier. I don't think there are very, very many kids learning from both sides. I think we're seeing that trend, you know, go in a direction of guys specializing in more one. We see it happening all the time with sports now. There's so many kids specializing in a sport. I just think we're seeing more focus on one thing rather than multiple things. And, you know, switch hitting takes a lot of talent and it takes a lot of time from both sides. And I just don't see it as a trend that we're gonna that's gonna continue to grow.
Yeah, we talked to Siegler about it.
Yeah.
And that it'll be interesting to see how he progresses through the minors switch hitting. You know, maybe there's a lot of instances where guys are drafted as switch hitters, and then at some point through the minors, they just start to focus on one thing because,
yes,
let's face it, it's hard. It's hard to do both. Mark Teixeira talked about it. It's double the work. So if you're going to do double the work for the next two decades, fine, but be prepared to do that.
That's the thing. It's so much work to even get to this point. And then you have to do both and learn both from both sides. And you have to, you know, learn the scouting report of the pitchers from both sides and not just one. And you just kind of, there's a lot more to do. And especially we talk about Siegler, even with the way that he started doing it, was his dad was throwing him batting practice from both sides every day. Like, it takes a long time for you to get remotely proficient at that. And it's got to be started at a very early age for the majority of people. I mean, I get you have freak athletes out there that are doing certain things later in life, but yeah, it takes a long time. So it's a lot of dedication and a lot of just repetition at that. So I just don't see it trending up.
All right. Last but not least, did you remember Sock Therapy?
Our trivia
friend. He used to send us in more a lot of the first 100 episodes trivia questions.
A lot of riddles too. A lot of riddle me this.
Been away for a while, but he's back. Hello, friends. Have you forgotten about me? But have you forgot about the lost Yankee? I have more trivia, just a little for you. On the news of Otto Zero, who was the last Yankee hero to achieve a war of zero? I may not be the best rhymer, but who needs to be when you know the old timers? He says, must have qualified plate appearances. I'm talking about the last Yankee batter to play a full season and achieve a war of exactly zero. And we both saw the answer. So let's not even guess and tell the listeners that it's Robinson Cano. In 2008, according to Fangraphs, he had a war of zero. But if you look at his baseball reference war, it was 0.2. But I was actually kind of shocked it was Cano, because you think about it, and Cano basically since 2005 when he came up was just mashing the ball. But he did have a down year in 2008 for whatever reason.
For whatever reason. For whatever reason. Sock, appreciate you coming back. First of all, with the rhymes, the answer, put a couple spaces in between it. I read it too fast. One, I wasn't expecting one from you again.
We haven't seen him in like a year and a half.
So my eyes are trained to go to the next line, and I saw it too fast. I was a little mad that I couldn't guess. But it's surprising when you look back and you think that Cano is the last guy to come out there and produce a WAR of exactly zero. But
it's also with Cano, it was hard for him to produce only a zero WAR because he was always a plus defender. So even if he wasn't hitting, he was always contributing because he was a very good defensive player.
Yeah. No, it's definitely one I don't think anybody would guess. It would be very I'd be extremely impressed if anybody guessed that.
Yeah. Keep the trivia coming. It's a lot of fun to see the answers after we read it, but pretend like I was going to guess Robinson Cano 2008 anyway.
All right, I never would have in a million years guessed that.
That's going to do it for us. Another awesome set of mailbag questions. Appreciate you guys doing it. Submit them at bronxpinstripes.com/podcast and look out for the tweets and the Facebook posts for the calls for mailbag. They usually go out later in the week, Thursday, Friday. Also take a minute to rate and review us 5 stars in iTunes. You know the deal. We say it every friggin' episode, but just go and do it already. And tomorrow, Tuesday, will be Scott's conversation with Josh Stowers. Scott, any last words? You want to make a Super Bowl prediction?
Jesus. Yeah, I'm going to make a prediction just because I pray to God the Rams win. That's it. I just don't care anymore. I don't care anymore. I'm over it. Man. I don't give a shit. Yeah, I'm sick of seeing it. The whole fact that they're playing the card that they're underdogs is so unbelievably ridiculous. Tom Brady's weird for kissing his son on the lips for as old as he is. I don't like that. It makes me feel very uncomfortable. And he's just a weirdo. So I hope he loses in the Super Bowl.
Well, congratulations on Kevin Mawe. Hall of Fame.
Kevin Mawai.
Mawai.
Yes. I didn't Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame center name. Of the New York Jets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah. When's the who's the other center after him?
You're talking about Mangold.
Mangold. He's gonna make the Hall of Fame, right? He was there for like 2 decades. Seemed like.
Yeah. He's. I could see most likely he will. I mean, he was a rock for a long time on those teams. So he's a hell of a.
He was
a player.
Your best player for like 10 years.
Yeah, he was a good player. That was tough when your center
is your best player.
Well, DeBrickashaw was up there too. He played really well, and you know that's why Mark Sanchez was an adequate, you know, quarterback for a couple of years under the Rex Ryan regime. He actually was shown some uprightness until he ran into some ass.
You know, that's been the downfall of many men.
That's true.
All right, that's going to do it for us. Again, Tuesday's episode, check it out. And you guys already know my Super Bowl prediction. We'll talk to you later.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.